Okay, welcome to Off the Hook Overtime, where we are hopefully on YouTube, and we always have to talk for a few minutes to make sure we're on YouTube, because we never really know for sure. I guess it takes several seconds for the signal to get there, and to get to Rob T. Firefly's ears, when he gives us a thumbs up and tells us, in fact, we are on YouTube, and we're not just going to talk to ourselves like idiots. Okay, good, good. We are on YouTube, apparently, and hopefully we stay on YouTube this week. We'll see. Our phone number, 802-321-4225. But this note, before those dialing fingers get busy, if you called last week, save it for another week. Let someone else have a chance. We asked people to do that last week. Some people broke the rule, and they called in, but that's fine. But that was your week last week. Now let's let other people call in. 802-321-4225 is our phone number. If it's anything you want to share, questions, feedback on the last hour of broadcasting that we just did, or plans maybe for the 2600 meeting, et cetera, et cetera. How are you guys holding up with the heat? It's been pretty bad. We've had a fan going. I apologize if that noise has somehow distracted people from our voices. But I think it's ending. I think the heat wave is going to be over soon, and it wasn't too bad. Alex?
Yeah. I'm just cracking open a cold one here right now. I'm here in Pennsylvania. It was quite hot today, and I had to mow the lawn.
Wait, why did you have to mow the lawn in that kind of heat?
Well, because it's going to rain the next couple of days over here. So uh-huh. If I was going to mow the lawn before, we're actually having some people come over, believe it or not.
And what, people don't like long grass? What kind of people are these?
When it's mowed. And, you know, being the good Samaritan that I am, I also mowed the neighbor's lawn as well, primarily because my wife makes me do that.
Does your neighbor want you to do that, or are you just mowing lawns in your neighborhood until somebody tells you to stop?
Yeah, well, that would be one way to win friends and influence people, I guess. But, no, my neighbor, they definitely appreciate it, and they're wonderful people. They've become like family to us, especially during the pandemic of the last year and a half. But I have to say, here in the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania, it's a hell of a lot cooler than it was in the city. I was driving around Manhattan yesterday to have various lunches with clients and meetings and things like that.
Lunches? How many lunches did you have in one day?
Actually, I had two.
Wow. You're living the life, I got to say.
I know, yeah, and it shows, let me tell you. But the temperature reading in my car, my Volkswagen, was reading 104 as I was driving through Midtown.
Now, hopefully that wasn't a temperature reading in your car. That was a temperature reading outside your car.
Yeah, thank God. It was the outside, but it also made the air conditioning feel like it was really ineffective. I was kind of worried about the air conditioning system in my car, and I think it was just because it was so insanely hot outside that even with the air conditioning blasting, it was still pretty warm. I mean, it's been pretty brutal, I have to say.
Well, Alex, if you want to take a trip over to Portland, Oregon, you know, and see what 118 degrees will do to you, especially places that don't have air conditioning as a rule, that would be an educational trip, I think.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, you look at a lot of places that just aren't used to heat. When they get heat, it becomes a major problem. Even a lot of restaurants and flats in London don't necessarily have air conditioning because generally it doesn't get that hot, right? But I have been to other places, and obviously, you know, if you go to DEF CON in Las Vegas, you feel that dry heat, and it can get up to 110, you know, or higher at sometimes. But, you know, Dubai as well is a place where I've been, and it's, you know, insanely hot over there, especially in the summertime. So, but, you know, they're used to it. But when these things hit places like Portland, you know, I really do feel for these people because it's unexpectedly brutal.
Yeah, a special offer if you're in Portland. Actually, I don't know what the offer is, but please call us if you're in Portland. We'd like to hear from you. Just 802-321-HACK, 802-321-4225 is our telephone number. You don't have to be in Portland, but if you are, that would be cool. Well, I guess that's the wrong word to use. That would be neat. Yeah, that would be real swell. There were other stories that... we didn't get to. We always manage to miss a bunch of stories because an hour just isn't a lot of time. And I wanted to talk about the Supreme Court ruling about the cheerleader. You know, the Pennsylvania school was trying to punish a cheerleader for swearing on Snapchat. And the Supreme Court ruled 8-1. 8-1, of course, being Clarence Thomas. So that's almost like 8-0. Determined students' rights to free expression outweighed the school's interest in preventing potentially disruptive speech. In this case, a snap captioned F school, F softball, F cheer, F everything, with F being what you think it is. Justice Stephen Breyer delivered the majority opinion, upholding an appeals court decision from the Third Circuit. He said that student Brandy Levy, identified as BL in court documents, well, then why'd I just dox her? I guess her name is out now, so I'm not going to feel guilty about that. Shouldn't have been suspended from her cheerleading team for a vulgar post about school sports. While public schools may have a special interest in regulating some off-campus student speech, the special interest offered by the school are not sufficient to overcome BL's interest in free expression in this case. The student's pure speech wasn't harmful or harassing. She had unsuccessfully tried out for varsity cheerleading as well as a position on a private softball team, and vented about the results on Snapchat, including a follow-up snap that said, love how me and another student got told we need a year of junior varsity before we make varsity, but that doesn't matter to anyone else. Yeah, I'm sorry not to care myself. But another student complained about the snap, and the school issued a one-year suspension because she used profanity in connection with a school extracurricular activity on social media. You know, to us, this just seems like it makes sense. You're not doing something at the school. You can say whatever you want, and it's got nothing to do with the school. Does that make sense, Alex?
Oh, it absolutely does, and this is a case I've been tracking for some time, in particular because the free speech rights of students off campus, or, you know, off of, you know, or not even off campus, but, you know, not even proximate to the school, should really be overwhelming. And I think that the Supreme Court decision, the 8-1 decision, you know, reflects that. Yet, on the other hand, to be fair here, I did a while ago listen to the oral arguments, or some portion of the oral arguments that occurred before the Supreme Court in this particular case. And the school's interests, you know, were interesting. You know, the arguments weren't necessarily without merit. I mean, I think that the First Amendment interests certainly overpowered them, but the arguments that the school district were making had some force and power, and had some good to them as well. So, for instance, if somebody says something on Snapchat or Facebook or any one of these social media platforms, let's say, encouraging another student to commit suicide, some form of cyberbullying, the school then should be able to have some kind of authority or some ability to discipline that student for bullying another student online. And
why the school? Why not some other entity like society? Why does the school get the authority to discipline somebody for doing something heinous in their own life?
Look, I agree, and the school wouldn't necessarily have jurisdiction over, let's say, a public playground if one child was bullying another child there. So, look, I mean, you're picking up on, I think, the right counter arguments here, but the school certainly has some interest in promoting and protecting the health and welfare and mental well-being of its students. But what this case really gets at, especially with respect to the school's interests and our civil liberties, is that our digital lives and our physical lives are really blurring here. And a lot of the interactions that we would have in person, or let's say on school grounds, happen online. And, you know, what if that post was made, let's say, you know, from an IP address that was associated with the school, you know, using the school's facilities or using the school's networks, would the outcome have changed? You know, these are, I think, difficult questions that other courts are probably going to have to grapple with, but this is, I think the case came out in the right direction here, in favor of the First Amendment, in favor of students' rights to speak out publicly, and especially their right to criticize policies of the school. You know, that's what I think is particularly telling in this case as well, is that, you know, she was saying, F the school, left cheerleading. Well, great, you know, she should be allowed to say that. She, mm-hmm. she doesn't approve of their policies. Go out there and talk about them. So I think this one came out perfectly right, but there are still, I think, a lot of gray issues and gray areas where our physical and digital lives are going to continue to intersect and often collide when it comes to our rights and the rights of others.
It's interesting to me that Snapchat is a platform where your messages are supposed to be somewhat temporal, as far as I recollect, in that they're not supposed to stick around, but because someone complained, it was, I guess, screenshot or something like that, so that it could be entered in as some sort of evidence for the school. But I think, was it Breyer? I'm not sure who actually said it, but it was eloquent in saying...
I think it was Breyer.
The schools are the nursery of our democracy. I think that was...
Yeah, that's a good quote, I think.
Part of how it was characterized in one of the arguments, and I thought that was apropos. And she's stood up for herself and will be forever associated with this guy. I just applaud that, like fighting for what is right, and you're as a student, not backing down, you know, and taking it where it needed to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, kudos to her for pushing it as far as she did.
Yeah, she could have just been like, this is what I, you know, am facing, and been like, you know, really burdened by it, or so affected that she couldn't navigate a way around it, or come out with an outcome that satisfied her. And
she
said, she's satisfied with this.
F school, F cheer, F everything. But she didn't mean F everything, because, you know, she sure as hell cared enough to do something. And that's what we need more of.
Yeah.
People willing to fight for what's right.
I bet also she'll probably become a very interesting person as a result of this.
Let me give the number out again, 802-321-4225. I should say, if we don't hear from anybody, then we'll have to assume that we only have the people that call every week and nobody else, and we'll open it up to them later. But for now, we're asking people who have not called in the last couple of weeks, really. 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK is our phone number, and you can be on the air. Well, it's not really air, but it's something that will be archived forever. How about that? Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I obviously went to high school about 100 years ago, before social media was a thing. But, you know, I had a very negative experience throughout high school. I was bullied, you know, the system was failing me in all sorts of ways, not worth getting into now. But to say that had I not been able to speak about what was going on with me in school, outside of school, had that been legislated away from me in some manner, like... That would have been so much worse. I don't know if I'd be here speaking with all of you right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the fact that, you know, school is a very oppressive experience for very many people. And, you know, whether constantly or whether in certain cases like this just becomes that way. And it's important to be able to speak about that. And in the modern media environment, that includes social media. You got to be able to speak your truth out there.
You know, my particular hell was junior high school, which, for those not familiar, junior high school is grades 7 through 9. And in grade 9, I just, it was like the Olympics of bullying. Just everybody turned their attention in my direction. And there was no social media. There was no way to speak out. And pretty much the teachers joined in whatever way they could. Had the same thing happen to me in fourth grade when I was... Basically, I didn't take the bus many times. I took the bus once, and for some reason, I was already on bad terms with some of the kids, but I didn't realize those kids were friends with everybody on the bus, so everybody was basically hitting me with books and things like that. And what I did was, I wrote an expletive with my finger in the window, you know, in the fog, and someone told the bus driver, and I got in trouble. I got sent to the principal, who then basically lashed into me for ridiculous reasons, and the bullies were just let go. That was the reality back then, before social media. So, boy, if I had the opportunity to say F this and F that, I would have taken it. I guess I can say it now. Mm-hmm. But fortunately for me, after the ninth grade hell, I started high school, which is grades 10 through 12 for me, and met cool people. All of a sudden, I just found better people, and that made such a difference, realizing that, wow, there are people who aren't going to judge me. There are people who aren't going to be idiots. Luck of the draw, because it could have easily gone the other way, but that is always possible, no matter what situation you're in. You can always just round the corner and find somebody awesome, or just find something new to get involved in. And I'm just glad that I didn't give up back when things seemed so hopeless. And I realized that's what so many kids, so many people are going through constantly in their schools, in their homes, at their places of employment, in their countries. You just have to hold out hope that you'll find other people, that things will get better, that you'll find a voice and really start to prosper. You know, we're not going to give up on anyone, so please don't give up on yourselves or your futures. Alex?
Speaking of finding other people, I mean, you mentioned junior high as being particularly hellish. Mine was too. You know, I was pretty active in the chess club, which, as you can imagine, was, you know, where all the cool kids used to hang out. And I have to say, though, in going back to the 2600 meetings, I started, I think, to really excel in school, realize that there were a lot of other people like me when I started hanging out at 2600 meetings. I met some people, believe it or not, on BBSs, bulletin board systems, fellow hackers that went to my school district. And we got together, we met up, I'll never forget, I met a buddy of mine, lifelong friend of mine now, in a hallway in our high school, and we realized, wow, you know, we knew each other from bulletin board systems, and we made red boxes together, we got together, you know, we used to sneak into the city by taking the train from Long Island, you know, over to Penn Station, going to the 2600 meetings, meeting other people, really expanding my social circle, getting into all kinds of trouble in the city court building and elsewhere, and doing all kinds of fun hacker things. But it also gave me the intellectual confidence to do well in school. Up until about 10th grade or so, I really didn't give a crap too much about my grades. I wasn't too concerned about it. I just sort of coasted by. But then I started to realize, well, look, if I can do all of these amazing things with computers, if I can program in C, if I can hack Unix systems and Linux systems, and I understand all these esoteric concepts that neither my math teacher nor social studies teacher nor biology teacher would have any clue about, nor most adults would have any knowledge about, therefore, you know, I should be able to get an A in math. You know, calculus shouldn't be that difficult. Physics should be pretty easy. And so I deluded myself into thinking, you know, that by necessary implication, again, if I can do these very difficult things with computers, then everything else should be rather simple. And I kept that mentality throughout college, throughout law school, and I think, frankly, it served me pretty well. So hanging out and getting involved with all of the lunatics at 2600 meetings, I think, you know, was a real stepping stone for me in my life, you know, personally and frankly, professionally, too.
Well, you know, in your case, you did well academically. Your grades improved. You excelled at these subjects. The more I got involved, the less my grades went up. But I realized, at least to me, that didn't matter so much. I decided to take an extra year of college and just sort of, you know, take it a little bit easier and try to learn more and get more involved in other things. And that's really what propelled me forward. It wasn't so much trying to do well at something that I didn't really care that much about, but finding things that I did care about and finding people that I cared about and learning more about those and spending, you know, more time with the things that I valued. That can be just as important. So even if you're not doing well grade-wise, that's, you know, not the most important. Who remembers now? Who remembers now what grade you got, what your GPA was? Actually, I remember my GPA, but that's not the point. The point is, it doesn't. Nobody else cares at all. And good luck trying to prove, you know, where you got an A 30 years down the road or whatever. These things, they might seem to matter at the time. They might seem to be everything, but they're really not. And that goes for the things that you think matter so much now. They don't matter that much either. The things that really matter are the interpersonal relationships and the creativity and just doing the things that nobody else can do, that only you have a particular perspective. And whether or not anybody else values that or appreciates that or tells you how awesome it is, it matters. Believe me, it matters. And you just got to keep doing these things. Believe me, as somebody in the hacker world, I'm used to people saying, you're wasting your time, this nobody else cares about this. That's kind of the theme of being a hacker. And I think that's why we value each other so much. Now, Kyle, I see you have the phone up. Does that mean we have a phone call? Are there no listeners? Do we have nobody? See, now I'm starting to feel it now.
Why don't you turn it up? Just check.
Nobody cares. Turn it up. I'll get the horrible noise if nobody's there. Okay. Is anybody there? Is there a caller on the line?
Hold on.
There's no caller on the line, Kyle. What buttons are you hitting? Now? Oh, it's the dial tone. The dial tone has called us.
Our old friend, the dial tone.
Yeah, but you know, but as long as we're doing this, nobody can call in. So I have to, fade down. Our number, once again, and you're just going to make us sad if nobody calls. And I see there's people on, a lot of people on, actually. 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK is our phone number, which hopefully is working. Maybe they disconnected it. Maybe that's why nobody's calling.
If there's a story, hacking related, that perhaps you feel you'd like to share, mm-hmm. by all means.
Yes. Well, there you go. There's a phone number.
Let me go ahead and answer this.
Yeah, go ahead and answer that. And I can tell this phone call is coming from Washington, D.C. I'm sorry for revealing that information, but go ahead, caller.
Not actually in Washington, D.C., but I went to school there.
You went to school there, and that's where you got your phone. Okay, and that's all the personal information that I'll reveal. What's on your mind?
Well, you guys were begging, so I figured I'd call in.
We were begging.
I had an idea that I have had in the back of my head by you guys, and see if you can either help me or pick out any flaws in it.
Okay, go ahead.
So I was in the Apple store when I got the idea. I was setting up a new iPhone, and it was seamless. I mean, I think it took 5 or 10 minutes to transfer everything from my current phone onto the new iPhone. And it got me thinking, could you do this with someone else's phone? So let's say I went into the Apple store, bought an iPhone, went over. I mean, of course, you'd have to access their phone for a minute or two, because I think you have to... I don't know if you put the Wi-Fi on or if you put Bluetooth on or if you even have to do that. But you have to click some, startup button, look for device. You find a device. On that device, you, I guess, give it access. And then it totally, models your entire phone onto the new iPhone within minutes. So I had the idea if, I wanted to look at someone's phone to buy a new iPhone, borrow their phone, can I borrow your phone, click it, and then, I guess, wipe the device and have it put onto another one. Do you think it's a poor idea, or do you think it could work?
Well, as far as ideas, you might not make friends. Alex, I know you have an iPhone. I hope I'm not giving away too much by saying that. So have you gone through this process? Are you familiar with it?
Yes, I am familiar with the process, as a fact. And look, I think in theory, it's possible that it could work, but I think that you need to have the passcode of the device that we copied onto the new device, as well as the access to the current device, and then they need to be in proximity with each other or to each other, for a certain period of time, and depending upon the capacity of the phone that's being copied, right? How much data is actually stored on that device? How much data is actually stored on that device? Let's say you've got a 256 gigabyte iPhone. That might take a considerable period of time to transfer over to the target phone. So I think, in theory, if you have access to both of the devices and have them next to each other for a period of time, it could happen. But to do it surreptitiously without the target knowing or realizing that something is weird, that might be more difficult.
Does that answer you? Go ahead.
Hmm?
Does that answer your question?
It does. I might test it out. See if it works.
Well, I mean, I'm all for testing things out to see if they work, but I would suggest doing it with somebody that knows you're doing it and just see if, and then be able to say, okay, so if you didn't know I was doing this, this would have worked,
Yeah, and I think one other concern...
Then if you're using the phone and you answer a text message, before they answer a text message, will it show on their device or whatnot?
Yeah, well, you could always erase it before they see it if you have access to their device.
Yeah, I don't think it would clone it necessarily. I think you'd have one or the other phone on that associated with that number. It's similar to the process of cloning, but I don't think it's the same thing. You're sort of transferring from one to the other. I'm not intimately familiar, but there's like the backing up of it, but the also one active phone and its baseband sort of info, the guts of it, that the network would be concerned with would be, I guess, reassociated with the new hardware in that process. But I've never personally done it with an Apple product, so Alex, you might know more than I am.
And you could bet like somebody will have tried this already, right? Because this kind of idea, I'm sure other people have had, right?
Maybe. You know, what one thing, you know, Kyle, I think you're right too, but you know, also the thing to remember is that you wouldn't necessarily be copying over the SIM card either. You're just copying the data on the phone, so the phone itself wouldn't be replicated. You wouldn't have access to the cellular network. You would be able to receive, you know, emails, SMS messages, things like that, I believe, without the SIM card in there, because that's all just, you know, sent over the internet, sent over, you know, normal protocols. Without necessarily authenticating the SIM, I think. One other wrinkle in this could be that you may need access to the target phone's iTunes account in addition to having the passcode of the phone. So in that sense, there's really a two-factor authentication, if that is the case, and I think it is the case, that you would also need access to the iCloud account. Or iTunes account, whatever Apple's calling it, whatever the Apple account is that they're calling it these days. And so that might be difficult. Yet, on the other hand, though, what is interesting is that I did this recently when I migrated over to an iPhone 12. And I think the caller brings up a very interesting issue that this is possible to do if you have those two passcodes, let's say. And when I did this and I finished with my phone, I never received any kind of email or notification, something like that, that my phone had been cloned. And perhaps it's a good idea for Apple to begin doing something like that, so that if a phone is cloned using the phone-to-phone migration technology that they've developed, so that it deters this kind of abuse, or at least if there is a target who unknowingly has had his or her phone cloned, they would at least receive some kind of notification from Apple that this technology was used on their phone.
I'm surprised they don't do that already. That seems shocking to me.
Yeah, I didn't receive anything about it. I mean, you know, I could have missed it. I don't think that I did. I probably would have remembered it if I did receive something. But I think it's particularly troublesome in the context of something like domestic violence, where there's an abuser in the household who may have ready access to passwords, may be able to use the Face ID to open up somebody's phone, even when they're sleeping, and begin to monitor and track and stalk, you know, their victim much more easily by having a clone of their phone.
Yeah, it's not a trivial thing to do, and it really depends on what your end goal, like your aim to what you're trying to achieve. Like, are you trying to get data from the phone necessarily? Are you trying to impersonate them in some way? Or just eavesdrop and be aware of their communications in real time in some way. But this is a probably more complicated way of doing what is very common in digital forensics, where copies and clones of things are made with write-blocking devices to prevent the data from being corrupted. But in this case, you may be doing more than you're actually trying to do in the end, if it's just to get some data off like a memory on the phone, or maybe all you would need is just the iTunes account. You wouldn't necessarily need to have physical access, but it depends on what you're trying to get out of it.
Rob, did you have something? Rob?
Yeah, sorry about that. This was also something that in the early days of smartphones, you could, with some models of phone, connect it to a computer when it was locked and still access the files on it, like a USB drive. It wasn't until later on, I want to say maybe 10, 15 years ago-ish, that they started actually locking the contents of the phone when the phone itself was locked. So if your phone is really, really old, you might be able to just get in there by hooking it up, but that doesn't work with current generations of phones.
Well, we wish you luck with your endeavors. Please keep us apprised of what happens, because it sounds interesting.
Yeah, right. And if other listeners have information or perhaps have tried to do this with a Target phone, I'd be interested in figuring out what are the challenges here, and abusing this phone-to-phone migration technology in the way that the caller had suggested. I think it'd be an interesting discussion.
Okay, thanks for your call.
I think I'm going to try it out, so I'll call you back.
Absolutely. Right. Keep exploring.
Best of luck. Take care. Wow, interesting idea there. It makes me think of something. I don't really know that much about the technology, and I haven't spent that much time really experimenting with it. Bluetooth in with car phones, a phone that's in the car, you basically pair it. We've all done this. And it means that you can use your phone and for various purposes in your car. You can use a speakerphone. You can attach all kinds of audio sources and things like that. Kyle, we did that. We've done that. And a few weeks ago, I was we had parked the car. You were in the car, and I was making a phone call, and You basically turned the car on and you stole my call.
That's
call
right.
Suddenly went to the car and went away from my ear. And I figured that, you know, there's got to be a way to have a lot of fun with that. But there's also probably a way to really do bad things with that as well. It just seems like that shouldn't happen. You know, I was on the phone. All you did was turn the car on and boom, it's you have the call now. And the caller didn't know.
Relatively hostile, yeah. And I was frantically trying to turn the car off and then, I guess, hand it back to you.
Uh-huh.
It was funny.
Yeah, it was awkward.
Speaking of calls, I think
we have a call? Yeah. Okay. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Speak up, please. You sure we have a call? I don't think we have a call. Is anyone there? Well, somebody... It's silent, but I don't think there's anybody there where they can't hear us. But try calling back.
Maybe they want to go get snacks.
802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. You guys ever experiment with Bluetooth like that? You ever have weirdness happen, Alex?
Yeah, well, sort of, yeah. Like I said, you know, I did this recently, this device-to-device migration thing. And in fact, I'm looking at the instructions for it right now. From Apple, and I think I may have been wrong about needing the iCloud or iTunes account password. I don't think you do. I think you just need access to both devices. I mean, I have the instructions here right now. It says, you know, how to use device migration. Turn on your new device, place it near your current device that's using iOS 12.4 or later. The quick start screen appears on your current device and offers the option of using your Apple ID to set up the new device. Make sure that it's the Apple ID you want to use, then tap continue. So the Apple ID is on the new device. If you don't see the option to continue on your current device, make sure the Bluetooth is turned on. Wait for an animation to appear on your new device. Hold your current device over the new device, so your old phone over the new phone. Then center the animation in the viewfinder. Wait for a message that says, finish on new device. If it can't find it, then follow these other steps.
So this is using Bluetooth as well?
Sounds like arranging crystals and stuff.
Okay, I wasn't aware it was using Bluetooth, but that seems to be something where you could do a bunch of shenanigans.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but here's an important step, too. Then when asked, enter your current password on your new device.
New device, yes.
All the instructions to set up Face ID or Touch ID on your new device.
Mm-hmm.
Tap. Transfer from old device to begin transferring your data from your previous iPhone to your new device. That's, you know,
but you need physical access to the old device, and you would need access to the password, right?
That's correct.
So if you had that, then you have the phone. You could do whatever you want with that info anyway. So what's the big deal?
Well, not necessarily. Well, look, sure. If you have the, not necessarily though. If you have the passcode to the phone,
mm-hmm.
You know, then you have access to all of the data that's stored in the phone, the text messages,
right.
You know, even, you know, things that somebody would have assumed were protected because they were encrypted. right? You know, you could have access to their signal messages, telegram messages, et cetera, things that were encrypted in transit that, you know, are generally protected on the device, but only by the passcode on the device. You know, every endpoint is going to be able to, that receives those messages is going to be able to read them. So the other thing is, that's concerning to me is that it doesn't seem like there is an additional challenge form here, some kind of password or something like the, you know, having access to the target phone's iTunes account. That would be an additional factor of authentication, some kind of multi-factor authentication for this. So, you know, the caller may be right, and you know the deterrent from doing this may just be the physical logistics of having to have the phone in your possession for such a long period of time that would make doing it covertly rather difficult.
Interesting. I also, we have a caller on the line. We're going to get to it in just a moment. But I also, this makes me wonder about if you give your passcode to, say, a customs agent and they disappear with your phone for a little while, well, what do you think they could be doing? You know, they could be cloning your phone as well. And think about that.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. All right, let's take this call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Can you hear me?
We hear you.
Okay, this is my name is Phil. I'm from Missouri.
How you doing?
And I was wondering what you guys think about the Tucker Carlson thing about being, you know, bugged by the, listened to by the
NSA. Yeah, I don't know anything about it, to be honest. I just heard Tucker Carlson and I kind of tuned out, but I'd like to know more. You know, the thing that bugs me about it is that they're making that into the number one issue when there are so many other issues that don't involve Tucker Carlson that are more important and urgent that they're ignoring. But that doesn't mean I'm not interested in finding out what, if anything, this is about.
I mean, it's not unprecedented for the NSA not to listen to anybody because they did it during the Obama administration and, you know, in any other administration you go with. But, you know, Carlson and Tucker like to, you know, pump things up to get ratings anyway. So I'm just wondering if you think it's just legit or if it's just something to get ratings.
I would go with the latter. I think most everything he does is to get ratings. That's not to say that he's the only one, but he's particularly egregious, I think, in his case. But that said, let it play out. Like, investigate. Sure, look into it. See, you know, who's telling the truth and who isn't. And I think that, you know, the truth will prevail. Alex, did you have something on this?
Yeah, I do. You know, having worked briefly in the intelligence community, well, I have.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit.
Oh, any better now?
Yes, much better.
Connection. Yeah, having spent some time in the intelligence community myself and in a legal capacity, I can speak to the notion that monitoring an individual domestically, a U.S. person, a United States citizen, to get authorization to do that is taken extremely seriously, would require a court order and require, you know, a showing that you are likely working as an agent of a foreign power. And that would have to go to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And so there would be a record of this. And I think what Tucker Carlson is claiming is a little bit specious because, you know, he may have been picked up in some kind of domestic spying dragnet, let's say where AT&T or Verizon Business Networks, you know, is sharing information with the intelligence community. On a massive scale, I mean, that was the subject of the Snowden revelations, in which case there is a lot of communications of United States persons that are being hoovered up, so to speak, by these intelligence operations, but they're not necessarily being targeted individually. And what Tucker Carlson seems to be claiming is that he is targeted individually. I don't necessarily think that would be the case. Kyle, well, you had a...
No. I think you actually are answering it, though, in that, like, yeah, he may not necessarily be the target, but if his network, if he is affiliated or associated with people that are, and they are legitimately because maybe they're working with government assets or some foreign actor that clearly wishes some kind of ill will in some way and is already being pursued in some way, what's surprising about him, maybe his communications with Matt Gaetz or whomever, you know, his pals are. What's stopping him from being associated in like you said, a larger database of calls made from these commentators.
By his network, you mean Fox News or his network of people?
I mean network like communications network. Your unified communications network. Uh-huh. All the different ways you talk on every different channel, every different protocol, all the time, anywhere in the world, and to whom.
I would love to ask this question of Edward Snowden. I think he would have the most definitive explanation of what's possible, what isn't, you know, whether or not this should be taken seriously. That's a voice I would believe. Alex?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm sure the caller is wondering how we would deal with Tucker Carlson's claim that there was a whistleblower that told him this, that had specific information and access to his email. Well, to that, I would say there's two alternatives here, at least two alternatives I can think of just on the fly. Number one, perhaps some of those communications that you get hoovered up in this massive dragnet that, you know, applies to a certain network, as Kyle had mentioned and we were discussing, in which case somebody might have access to those communications and abused their privileges internally to then reveal that information to Tucker Carlson. The other option, more plausible infinitely in my view, is that it wasn't the NSA that had access to his personal communications and proved this. It's just some ordinary person who perhaps was able to compromise and breach Tucker Carlson's personal email account. Who knows? Right? I mean, I have no idea how many accounts of Tucker Carlson, you know, have been part of other data breaches. What kind of passwords he uses? Does he use multi-factor authentication? You know,
right.
his cyber hygiene, I think, in any material respect on Fox News. So simply having access to personal communications doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it was the NSA that got them, you know, and it's a whistleblower that's sharing them honestly. You know, the other way to do this without even compromising any of Tucker Carlson's communications, or any of his accounts, rather, would be to simply obtain those communications from several parties with whom he communicated. Get copies of those emails, and then you can show him these emails, and it looks like you might have breached his account in some covert manner, but you didn't. You just talked to a couple people in his network that, you know, to whom he sent emails.
Oh, so that's evil. I love it. That's really, really evil. Yeah. But, you know, whatever this is, the conversation that's going on now, he's enjoying it. He's loving that. Look how many times we have said Tucker Carlson in the last few minutes. Okay, that is what it's all about, I think.
I think to a large extent it is, and I think that's why Trump in, you know, early, it was March 2017, something like that, made that outrageous claim that Obama was spying on his campaign. And it gets a huge amount of press when you make these very targeted accusations of malfeasance against a powerful organization like the National Security Agency. However, though, to be fair and to play both sides of this, you know, we don't necessarily have the best history when it comes to domestic surveillance, you know, of the media or even, you know, of activists, anti-war activists in particular, like Martin Luther King and Muhammad Ali and Jane Fonda. All these anti-war activists during the Vietnam War era, were their communications were being monitored by something called Project Minaret. And, you know, this was a big problem. However, it was the exposure of Project Minaret and Project Shamrock and, you know, all of these infringements of our civil liberties for domestic persons, United States persons, United States citizens, that gave rise to something called the Church Commission. And the Church Commission, with Senator Frank Church, in 1975, began to develop what is now known as the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And that created the system of judicial oversight for the monitoring of U.S. persons. And I can say, unequivocally, monitoring and spying on U.S. persons, especially individual persons, has to go through a series of several checks in order for that to happen. So, it's not something that's taken lightly. So I don't necessarily think Tucker Carlson's claims hold a lot of water in my view. And I do think that, this is all to gin up ratings and mentions on social media. And especially, I think he really was angling for us to talk about this tonight on Off the Hook Overtime.
Yeah, it's not about the concept necessarily of like mass surveillance and so on. It's all about like his personal situation. I think that's a huge tell, right?
Does that answer your question?
What do you guys think about Windows 11 requiring a TPM module on your board to be able to install it? And what about Bill Cosby, where he was released from prison today?
Well, I don't know if Bill Cosby really falls into what we talk about very much. It does. Yeah. I'll say it proves that if you have money, you can pretty much get anything.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, pretty much. As for Windows 11, I know it's been getting a lot of backlash.
Do you know what the DPM stands for? What exactly that hardware you were referring to is?
The trusted.
It's a security feature.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the what it stands for right off the bat.
Okay.
But it's supposed to be working with SecureBoot too. So I just try to put on dev, put on Insider Dev like last night, and it won't allow me to do it. I guess because I put my BIOS into Legacy so I can install Linux to dual boot.
Sure.
But, it's supposed to involve a TPM 2.0 to install it. But it's supposed to be a free upgrade for personal.
Interesting. Yeah, we're very interested in this, where they go with that, because Windows 10 is highly neglected, and I think they're just going to scrap it and go forward.
From what I've read, Windows 11 is not that much of an improvement, but it's a free upgrade, but there are a lot of conditions with the CPU architecture and all that.
Well, there's a lot of people tapping their feet like, okay, what's the plan here?
Yeah. Alex?
Keep playing with it, though. That's great. You're working with it.
Hang on, Carla, did you have something else?
Well, yeah, the two-factor identification thing, where they keep asking me for my phone number, it's just like, well, they're just putting that phone number into the database, right, so they can sell my data.
Well, yeah, they're going to do something with that. Sure, you give them any information, they're going to keep it.
Well, the thing is, if you do two-factor identification, like on an iPhone or an Android device that uses, like, a fingerprint, your fingerprint's on record, too.
Yeah, I would imagine so. At your eye, everything you put in there,
for the phone OS, for the OS, or for other things like third party things, because
I got an old iPad and it keeps complaining I need to enable two factor, and I do it anyway, and it keeps complaining about it like a few days later.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
But it just seems like they just want an excuse to take my phone number and sell it to somebody, because I get a lot of funky phone calls during the day.
Yeah, well,
ask me to donate to this, that, and the other, or,
You can get a phone number that is only used for that purpose, that forwards to your actual phone, so they don't get your real phone number. I get a Google Voice number or something that is able to get texts or phone calls. And that way, you only use it for these things. If it rings or you get another text, that it was, that information was given to them by whoever you gave that phone number to. Alex, did you have something?
One last thing, though.
Yeah.
Have you guys thought about doing a follow-up to Freedom Downtime?
Well,
like 20, 25 years.
Yeah, I don't know what we do. Like, would we start from when Kevin got released and...
so much has happened.
Yeah.
I miss those days.
Well, we
see you guys forever.
Oh, well, that's good to know. That's good to know.
We love the encouragement.
Like fiber optic, whatever happened to him?
He's living happily in California doing security research and consulting and things like that. And, I talk to him every now and then. He's doing great.
Isn't it funny that after so many years, the same guys they try to put in jail, they're looking forward to pay a bunch of money to...
Yeah, and that was really the only point that we were making when we made the film was, is this guy really the threat you're saying he is? Because they kept saying crazy things about him, could start World War III by whistling touch tones, which you can't do because it's dual tone. But it's just insane things like that. And we still talk about that to this day. The the assumption of what hackers can do. They can do everything. It's just fear of the unknown that that basically lets your imagination run wild and demonizes people who are really just curious and messing around with technology and very much like you and me, you know?
Well, you remember like John Oliver doing that expose on the nuclear system where they're using like 6-inch like floppy drives.
Oh yeah, the eight inch floppies. Absolutely, yes, I've seen those.
Yeah.
That's classic. But you know, in some ways, I kind of trust that system more because I know that's not connected to anything else, and I know you can't really hack into it. Alex, I think you had something to add. Alex?
Yeah, sure. With the caller's question, to revert to the issue of Windows 11, a friend and colleague of mine who's the CISO of a large healthcare organization wrote a great article about this, and I think he's not alone in surmising that one of the primary reasons why Windows 11 is going to require this newer generation of CPUs is because of the Spectre and Meltdown security flaws. These were vulnerabilities that had to deal with Intel's basically the logic within Intel CPUs, and they were all hardware based.
That's from sloppy coding. I mean, when you don't open source your software to find the bugs and everything, right? And you hide it until something bad happens, and you're like, oh, no, look what happened.
Right. You know, I mean, I remember Spectre Meltdown, you know, they were from, I think it was 2015, if I recall correctly. But Windows then basically had to mitigate this hardware vulnerability on the software side. And I think they're sick of doing that. It might cause a bunch of legacy issues or might cause vulnerabilities elsewhere. But I think what they're trying to do is to ensure that those types of vulnerabilities that are processor-based are outside of their responsibility going forward from Windows 11. And that, you know, this was the manufacturer's problem, a chip maker's problem, and that they've solved it, and now Windows can finally move on. So I see that being perhaps a good reason for this migration. But, you know, it might be nice to hear from Microsoft on this particular issue as well.
Well, good luck on that, because the way they acted over, you know, Internet Explorer back in the day and the whole thing with big corporations like IBM's Go, you know, and the DECSS stuff like with DVDs, because, you know, all they're doing is shooting themselves in the foot. I'll just stick with my Pop! OS install. until I can find a way to run, like, you know, the stuff like my Adobe stuff and Linux and everything, I'll still have Windows and for my games. But besides that, Windows could just kiss it. You know, Linux has such a small install base that, and it's pretty much updated. Every time I log into, it's updated. Plus, mm-hmm. It's open source, and plus I can change out the kernel whenever I want.
You know, you're preaching to the converted here, but yeah.
More use of control over it.
Uh-huh. No, we all know the advantages of these things, and it definitely stands out. Alex, I think you had one last point.
Yeah, to the cold point about the 8-inch floppies, it reminds me of something that happened to me last week. This would be fun to replicate, perhaps, on the air, if we could do it, since we have this dial-L capability. But I got a call from one of these scammers, one of these sort of tech support scam lines, basically telling me that I had, they were impersonating Microsoft and telling me that I was charged $399 for this extra subscription. And if I wanted to cancel it, I had to do so now, et cetera. So it was just, you know, convoluted scam. And it was obvious you're talking to a foreign call center. And I said, okay, I went along with it to see what the hook was going to be. And of course, it was the usual. They're going to use GoToAssist or Log Me In, one of these remote connections, to access your actual hardware, probably install malware, maybe some ransomware, who knows, and then charge you a bunch of money, steal your data, et cetera, et cetera. But when he told me to do this and go to the particular link, I mentioned to the scammer that it was giving me an error message. I said, well, what's the error message? And I said, it was telling me that my operating system is not supported. you know, and that I, you know, I either have to be using iOS or Android or Windows. And he said, well, what are you using? Are you on Windows or Mac? And I said, neither. He said, oh, you're on some kind of Linux system. And I said, no, I'm not. And he said, well, must be one of those. What else could you be using? And so I said to him, well, I'm running OS 2 Warp. And I said, OS 2 Warp, you know, what the hell, what is that? What is OS 2 Warp? Is it, it's Linux, 1989, right?
That's what that is.
Yeah. And I said, no, I'm running the latest version. It's, you know, it's 4.5.2. And you can hear him putting it in, right? And then realizing this is an operating system that was discontinued 20 years ago. But then I really whet his appetite by telling him that, you know, well, the reason we run this is because we have a lot of sensitive data on this computer.
Oh, wow.
And in particular, you know, we're an investment firm and we have all of the cryptocurrency wallets stored on this hard drive. And so you can imagine this guy was highly motivated to figure out how he could get an OS2 machine to use LogMeIn or GoToAssist. There were a couple of different services that he went through. But it really stymied him when we brought up this, you know, this old ancient IBM developed OS, which
you should have given him a website to go to where he would have to enter his information.
There's a lot of YouTube channels out there that does that. They'll set up a VPN and they will call into these services or you know, sign up for a service on one of these sites. And they'll like scam these guys, and they'll get like hundreds of thousands of views out of it, and they'll pretend to be somebody and just to put a YouTube video up of them just you know, pretty much just trolling these guys.
Uh huh. Uh huh. It's great fun.
Yeah.
Got to fight back sometimes.
I forgot what I was going to say. Oh yeah, a cryptocurrency where China's like banned it. What do you guys think about that?
I think they're scared. I think they don't understand it. I'm talking about the government. I think all governments don't understand it because it pretty much, you know, throws fiat currency into a tizzy. We don't claim to understand it either. But it is something to be reckoned with. I mean, you turn on CNBC now, you always see what Bitcoin is worth. So it should be taken seriously. And I think you're better off working with it than working against it. I think in the end, it will survive, as will other cryptocurrencies. There's a limit to how many of these you can have, but I don't think you can just erase what has been accomplished over all these years.
I think the government's really putting a pressure on. I think that's clear with the contracts being taken away from SpaceX, given that they were accepting a lot of Bitcoin, and I think that kind of pressure is going to keep moving around at a weird time when as many investment and banking and financial institutions as you can count have gotten into this space. Now there's this pearl clutching over how whatever the latest crime spree with Bitcoin somehow is the problem, when in fact the problem is bad security and security practices.
They have to solve the energy issue with Bitcoin. They absolutely have to solve that. But I believe they can solve that if they devote attention and resources to it.
I think the energy thing is it's a quandary to me, because I think, you know, printing paper currency, I mean, the carbon involved in having bank branches, you could go on and on. So I don't really know. I get there. Right,
but doesn't have to happen like this, though. I don't think it has to be this way.
And also how, in fact, cryptocurrency is spent. If you're spending it on things that are inherently carbon emitting, then, well, that's going to add to all the carbon that it took to produce that cryptocurrency. So I don't know. I think there's just a lot of finger pointing that seems awful convenient for people who seem a bit mad on the sidelines of it.
Carlo, we have to go because our night is almost done. But thanks so much for calling.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No problem.
And, could you guys put out a Blu-ray version of Freedom Downtown?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Can we do that?
I wanted to say, yeah, we are still doing stuff with video. We film a lot, and we have on some of the important events in the last 10, 20 years, I dare say.
We need to be cloned. That's the only way we have time for these
things. We have a lot of the original materials for that documentary, and it's certainly within the realm of possibility that we revisit it in some way, or that we
alternate endings where on it. Kevin doesn't get out of prison, you know.
And of course, even remastering it in some way would be tedious. We'd probably have to find. I think we have giant master long playing beta tapes on the mantle of a fireplace deep in the woods somewhere. I don't know. We'll have to dig up the archives and look in the tombs of the pyramids and find the relics that it would take to make a Blu-ray. But
honestly, I'd like to do something new.
We want to do not fresh
just
stuff.
Keep redoing the old things.
I'm telling you, follow would be great.
Yeah. Well, maybe somebody else can get themselves arrested, and we'll do another documentary about them. How about that?
Write us at OTH.
No, don't do that. No.
OTH at 2600.com if you have ideas for stories that aren't being covered, that might be worthy of a documentary. We'd love your ideas.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Where people's interests are.
Okay.
Well, thanks for listening, Jimmy. I'm sorry I rambled on.
No, that's okay. It was great. Call of the night, actually.
Yeah, great conversation.
And you're from what, Missouri?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm originally from Virginia, but I moved to Missouri like 4 years ago. But I've already moved back to Virginia.
Okay, well,
It's going to be a happier time come tomorrow because they just legalized weed for recreational use.
Oh, neat.
Start tomorrow.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. That's cool.
We'll definitely celebrate. Yeah.
All right, then. Well, you have a good night. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Thanks.
Take
Bye.
Care.
Have fun.
Rob, I think you had something to say.
Well, just if this puts you over the edge and finally sells you on this Blu-ray thing, there's a lot more room on those things for like even more special features and Easter eggs and commentary tracks.
Yeah, you know what? I think we had enough. We had so many.
It will never be enough.
We had more languages, and at the time we had more Easter eggs, I think, than any other DVD that ever come out.
I think it's one of the best authored DVD menus.
Yeah,
and you know, you don't that entire genre DVD menus. I think that's going to become like a lost art form, because often Blu-rays have even worse menus and features, the way they're displayed, and they're often thrown together by a production company as an afterthought and look pretty awful. So, and then that goes away with streaming and just files, I guess, now.
Wow, check this out, freedomdowntime.com. We still have that domain. I didn't realize that. But you can click on the button that says here on that site. Don't pick that up. Although it looks like it's from England, and that looks like it's from North Carolina. It's two calls at the same time. How is that possible? But we're done. We're done for the night, folks. Well, why didn't you call earlier?
We were begging
for so long, but we got good calls tonight, new people or people that haven't called recently. But on freedomdowntime.com, if you click on the Here button, you'll get a whole listing of all the Easter eggs and how you can access them on your DVD player with your copy of Freedom Downtime. Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to chime in, perhaps too late now, but I was going to suggest we take the calls. I think we could break the off-the-hook overtime record with, I think, another 8 or 9 minutes.
It's, here. You know, we've been on the air for over 2 hours now. I'm tired.
It's warm.
I don't have the energy I used to have.
I don't know if the equipment can take
it. The equipment is burning up. It's 150 degrees in here.
What if we have a meltdown? There could be some.
God's sake, man.
We're going
to
break.
I got emergency alerts on my phone telling me to use less electricity if possible, because, you know, the system is being strained.
You're sitting on a deck, Alex, with an umbrella and a pina colada. You know, I don't think it's fair to expect us here in the sweatshop of the studio to have to do more.
Well, you know, if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen.
I want to get out of the kitchen. Why are we in a kitchen? That doesn't make any sense.
I don't know either.
I have enjoyed this.
Yes, this has been fun. And we want to thank people who have called in and written in, OTH at 2600.com. Now, Rob, are you waving or do you have something to say?
Just really quickly before we go, I mean, tomorrow's Canada Day, so I wanted to wish all our Canadian friends and listeners a very happy one of those. Stay true north, strong and fierce, and enjoy yourselves.
Especially those of you in the Pacific Northwest and Yukon and places like that that are burning up. It'll be over. One way or another, it'll be over. But hopefully it'll be cooler, too. And we'll see you in happier times.
Yeah, wait till next year.
Don't say that. Don't say that. Unless you're the Montreal Canadiens. No, I don't mean that either. Because they're going to bring the Stanley Cup back, I hope. Okay, guys, good talking to you all. We'll see you again next week. And, have fun at the 2600 meetings if you go to one in your area. Good night.